turn your attention to Psalm 90. This was on my list and my radar to preach as we go through this series on Psalms, and I thought it would be appropriate today in light of graduations and the celebration of the milestones in people's life. Psalm 90, verse 12. So teach us to number our days, that we may present to you a heart of wisdom. So teach us to number our days, that we may present to you a heart of wisdom. God bless you. You may be seated. I got to tell you, I don't know how this will come out. I know what I experienced as I was putting it together. And most of the time when I'm doing a sermon, I type up my notes and my outline. And I had opportunity, or maybe necessity, that I did talk to text on much of this as we were out of town. My family was gone. And so I was doing talk to text through my computer into my Bible program where I structure and outline all of my messages. And so I had a move of the Holy Ghost while I was putting this together. So we'll see. Maybe I got it all out and it'll just be kind of a dud. But I think anytime the truth of the Word of God is preached, He always shows up. There are milestones in people's lives, things that we celebrate, certain levels of achievement that we celebrate. We celebrate, of course, the birth of a child, little Liam being born last night, and every year that milestone of the next year will be celebrated. But when babies are born, we of course rejoice and we celebrate, and then whenever they begin to crawl, we celebrate. Oh, little Johnny's crawling, little Susie, look at them crawl. Now, my son, he didn't crawl normal. He did kind of a crazy little crawl. But we still celebrated that he was crawling. And then we celebrate when our kids learn to walk and they take that first step. It's a milestone in their developmental process. And, oh, it's like, well, my kid walked before your kid. Anybody do that? Hopefully he didn't do that. But we celebrate those milestones. And then not only do they walk where they're kind of staggering around, then they get good at it, and then they begin to run, and then we wish they did not run because we have to chase them. And at that time in our life, we're too old and we don't want to chase them. But it's a milestone of development as they begin to run. And they talk, and we celebrate them talking. And kids talk at all number of ages. There's no set age. Some talk early, some talk late. But we celebrate when they talk, and then they go off to kindergarten for their first day. It's a milestone. I went off to kindergarten 3 times for my first day. I only lasted a week at each one of them, and then I was a kindergarten dropout. But I'm sure my parents celebrated all 3 of those Mondays when I tried a new kindergarten. And then I celebrated when I didn't go back. I celebrated when the bus would come by my house and I would lean out the door and I would wave at them and be like, I'm not coming today. I did finish school, by the way. I just skipped kindergarten to do it. We celebrate 8th grade. A couple of 8th grade graduates leaving middle school on their way to high school. And then we celebrate high school graduates getting the job done, finishing and getting that diploma. We celebrate trade school or college graduations and the accomplishments and the completion of those tasks, those educational and instructional tasks. And we celebrate marriage. We celebrate kids and we celebrate grandkids. I want to celebrate a grandkid in the beginning of July. Just thought I'd mention that. Somebody told me every time grandkids come up, I talk about it. I said, well, I'm going to do it again today. In case you haven't heard, I'm going to be a grandfather. young grandfather. What a grandfather. Many of these milestones, they deal with education and they deal with learning. Sometimes because we have to, and sometimes because we just want to learn a skill or a trade, and we need the necessary knowledge for a job or a career, we need to make money, we go and we do college or we do graduate school or we do trade schools or whatever it may be. We go and we learn that. But there is this little thing called wisdom that you don't always pick up in school. That no matter how much learning you have and no matter how much knowledge you have, you sometimes don't have wisdom. We can have learning and knowledge, but not the wisdom that we need when it comes to the job in which we're seeking. It can also be true of church that we can come to church and we can learn about God and we can learn about His Word and we gain knowledge, but it doesn't mean we have wisdom. You can have wisdom, or you can have knowledge, but not wisdom. So what is wisdom? The psalmist would say, teach us to number our days so that we may present a heart of wisdom. Well, what is wisdom? It is simply this. It is applied and lived out understanding. It's knowledge that is then applied to your life and actually lived out. You can know what you need to do and not do it. That's knowledge and not wisdom. I'm an expert, just ask me, on nutrition and exercise. That's why I got diabetes. Because I had knowledge, but not the wisdom to live out the knowledge that I had. And we can do that when it comes to spiritual things. The Dictionary of Biblical Languages with Semantic Domains says this: wisdom is the capacity to understand and so have skill in living, implying adherence to a set standard. And if you just take that on the surface, you can probably figure that out real quick, that you could have knowledge of this but not live it out, which means you have knowledge without wisdom. That if you don't follow what it says, knowing what it says doesn't get you anywhere. And I preached about the Word of God last week, and we talked about obeying the Word, and we are called to be doers of the Word and not just hearers only. But we can know what we're supposed to do and not do it, and that's not wisdom. That's just knowledge. The writer of Proverbs in chapter 1, verse 7 would say this: the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, are the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. The fear of the Lord is the beginning. Proverbs 9 and 10, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. Proverbs chapter 3, verses 13 through 18 gives an expanded discourse on wisdom. Happy is the man who finds wisdom, and the man who gains understanding. For her proceeds, wisdom's proceeds, are better than the profits of silver, and her gain than fine gold. She is more precious than rubies, and all the things you may desire cannot compare to wisdom. That you can have everything the world has, and it can't compare to the wisdom that comes from God. The wisdom that comes to telling you, this is how I live, and this is what God wants me to do, and I'm applying His knowledge and living it out in my daily life. He would go on to say, length of days is in her right hand, and in her left hand riches and honor. That if you have wisdom, you're going to live a long life. And if you have wisdom, you're going to get that wealth. You're going to have material goods as well, but you can have the material goods without it. And it's better to have wisdom than to have all of the others. Her ways are ways of pleasantness, and all her paths are peace. She, wisdom, this personification of wisdom, is a tree of life to those who take hold of her, and happy are all who retain her. Proverbs 4, 6, and 7, do not forsake her. Speaking of wisdom, and she will preserve you. Love her, and she will keep you. Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. Look at your neighbor and say, we need to get wisdom. Wisdom, no, really, look at your neighbor, say it like you mean it. We need to get wisdom. I know it's raining outside, and in a couple places in the building, it's probably raining inside. A little gloomy. But how much better to get wisdom than gold, and to get understanding is to be chosen rather than silver. We can have wisdom. Look at your neighbor and say, you can have wisdom. Now, don't say it like they don't already have it. Just say, you can have it, and if you've got some, you can have more. James would write this, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally and without reproach, and it will be given to him. That all you have to do is ask God, and he will give you wisdom. Now, you have to live it out. He'll tell you what you need to do and when you need to do it, but you got to live it out. The wisdom that we get from God isn't like the wisdom of the world. Because James would later say, but the wisdom that is from above is first pure. It's peaceable, it's gentle, it's willing to yield, it's full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. It's different than the world's wisdom. It is from above. And when we get God's wisdom, it will change our life. It will transform our lives. We need wisdom. We must walk in wisdom. We must have the wisdom that comes only from God, and that can only be found in His Word. Now, the writer of Psalm 90, it's Moses. David would write most of the Psalms, but Moses would write some, and others would write various ones, the sons of Asaph and others. Or the sons of, and they would write various ones. Moses wrote this particular psalm, and people have struggled, experts and theologians and Old Testament scholars have oftentimes struggled to figure out the context of Moses writing this particular psalm. But after analysis, it seems that many would come to this conclusion that Moses would write Psalm 90 when they were at Kadesh Barnea. Kadesh Barnea, many of you may have never heard of that. It is the place where they would camp, and Moses would send 12 spies into the promised land. Those 12 spies would go into the promised land, and 10 of them would come back and saying, we can't take the land. The land's too big for us. They've got walled cities. Oh, yeah, sure, it's flowing with milk and honey, and there's grapes the size of basketballs, but man, I know God got us through the Red Sea, but he can't do this. There are giants in the land, and 10 of the 12 would say it's not possible. And so the people would vote and decide, well, we're not going into the promised land. And so many would say it is there at Kadesh Barnea where they would spend many of their days. They would spend this great time just on the shore of the Jordan, on the banks of the Jordan, looking across the Jordan River into the promised land that they decided they would not go into. And that Moses, in that context and in that setting, would pen the words of Psalm 90. But understand that these people, these Israelites who are deciding that they're not going in to the promised land, they didn't really know the consequence of their decision. They didn't know that it wasn't going to be next year or the next. It wasn't going to be 10 years. It wasn't going to be 20. It wasn't going to be 30. It was going to be some 38 years. They didn't know that it was going to be almost 40 years before Israel would go into the promised land. But even more importantly, they did not know that all of those who were of voting age that said, we can't go in right now, they would never see the promised land. Yes, God had brought them out of Egypt, but they just weren't sure he could bring them into the promised land. He parted the Red Sea, but there's walled cities in this land. He destroyed the armies of Egypt, but they're giants in this land. Sure, life would go on like it had been. They weren't in Egypt. They weren't in the promised land, but God was providing. He was giving manna. Water was coming from the rock. But little did they know that their days were numbered, and little did they know that the clock was now ticking at a different speed. If you were under 20, you were okay. But if you were over 20, there were only 38 years of days left to go. Using the Jewish lunar calendar, there would have been some 13,680 days left to go before they would go into the promised land, but all of those over 20, they weren't going to make it. If you were 70, then maybe you got the whole 38 years and you lived to be 180. You're like, man, this is a good old life. I can see the promised land from here. It's good enough. If I still had friends and I was in good health, I'd be happy to live to be 108. It's going to be okay. Somebody will make it. If you were 60, then maybe you get to live to be about 98 years old. Oh, that's pretty good. I don't know too many 98-year-olds. It'll be okay. But understand that 38's, it's like the maximum. I know we talk about 40. It was 16 plus months from the time they left Egypt to the time they got to Kadesh Barnea, and another 38 years, so almost 40 years from Egypt to the promised land. I know some of you probably think, man, where did 38 come from? That's where it came from. It's 40 minus the time it took them to get to Kadesh Barnea. But it's the maximum. You're not guaranteed you're going to live until just the day before they go across into the promised land. If you're 50, 88 doesn't sound too bad. If I get to live to be 88, I'm 53, 88 sounds pretty good. If you're 40, well, 78's not too bad. If you're 30, 68 just doesn't start to sound that great. And if you're 20 years old, then 58 really doesn't sound good. I'm 53, 58 doesn't sound like a real good time to die. But they didn't know the consequences of their decision. They weren't numbering their days. They weren't taking the most of their days. They weren't taking advantage of the opportunity they had to go into the promised land. And that 38 years, it wasn't the guarantee. It was just the maximum. So maybe they lived 37 or 27, or maybe it's 10, maybe it's 5, maybe it was just next month. And with this backdrop, Moses would write the words to Psalm 90. And the turning point of that psalm is the verse I read. So teach us to number our days. We don't know what tomorrow holds. We don't know what the future holds in its fullness. So teach us to number our days that we may present a heart of wisdom. When you're young, everybody thinks they're invincible. At the age of 6, death wasn't on my radar. If it was, I wouldn't have been jumping out of barns and off of roofs and doing crazy stuff. If death had been on my radar, I wouldn't have listened to my older brother, who after we threw some rocks at a big old snake down in the creek, he's like, why don't you go down there and just bash his head in and kill him off? 5 years old, barefoot, walk down the creek, take a rock with a snake thrashing around the ground. I'm like, hey, man, I'm going to live forever. It's no big deal. I don't know what my brother was thinking, but he was only 8. When we're young, we think we're invincible and there's never going to be an end of it. But I would tell you, and I've come to tell you today, Lord, teach me to number my days. Tomorrow is not a guarantee, and next week is not a guarantee, and next month is not a guarantee. So, Lord, teach me to number our days, that we may present to you a heart of wisdom. And in this backdrop, Moses would give us a number of reasons why we should number our days. He starts off the psalm, and I'm not going to go through all of the verses. I'm not even going to read them, but he starts off with, with this understanding, God, you created us. So because you're created, you created us, we're here for your pleasure. You are the one that we are. We're here for your purpose. We're supposed to do what it is you want us to do. God, you've been our dwelling place. You've been the one that has taken us in. You've been the one that's provided for us. You're the creator of everything, Lord. And so because of that, then we should number our days and live in a way that you want us to live with intentionality, not just as things come and not live just on the spur of the moment, but intentionally following after you. And you can read it on your own time, the totality of Psalm 90. But after talking about the fact that God is the creator of all, he moves and this section where he talks about this important truth, there's limited time. God, you've been here forever. A day with you, Lord, is as 1,000 years, 1,000 years as a day. You're eternal. God, there's no time for you. You live outside of time. Time lives in you. But Lord, at some point he says, man's going to go back to dust. We're not going to live forever, Lord, so teach us to number our days. God, when you decide to, you sweep us away like a flood and people fall asleep and we're like the flowers. We bloom, we grow, and then we wither and we fade and we die away. God, we're going to die. And then he turns his attention to this anger of God that at the end of our lives there is judgment. And if you're not walking after him, what the judgment is going to include the wrath and the anger of God. And he says, but if you don't have a heart of wisdom, that's going to be your end. But if you have this heart of wisdom, you don't have to be in fear of judgment and wrath. Where our days are limited, verse 10, the days of our lives are 70 years. And if by strength of days we get 80. But even 70 is not a guarantee. What he says is this, there is a brevity to life. And because we don't know what tomorrow holds, all we know is this, tomorrow, there's going to be a time when tomorrow never comes. There will come a day when there is no tomorrow. And when that day comes, we're going to stand before our Maker. And so he says, Lord, teach us to number our days. So when we stand before the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, we present to him a heart of wisdom. Why should we number our days? Because God is going to judge us at the end of our lives. So you can read it in most of everything before 12 really talks about the why. But how do we number our days? We number our days when we do this, when we recognize that we live for an audience of one. That I don't live my life for you and you don't live your life for me. There's only one person we live our life for, and that is the Lord Jesus Christ. That when I live for him, then my whole goal and my whole purpose in life is to please him and to do what it is he wants. It's just the audience of one. And Moses would say, you have placed our iniquities before you, our secret sins, in the light of your presence. God, you see everything. You see what's done in secret. You see what's done out in the sunshine and in the light. So I'm going to number my days by recognizing that you see everything. I'm going to number my days by recognizing, God, that we belong to you. I'm going to number my days by understanding that my life is but a prelude to eternity. That this is just the precursor. That what is done here is not the main deal, but where I live for eternity is the main course. And I'm going to number my days by recognizing that my life is lived for your glory. And Moses would say, there's one important result. When I number my days, Lord, I'm going to present to you a heart of wisdom. And he uses the word heart here. He doesn't use mind of wisdom. It's not a brain of wisdom. It's a heart of wisdom. Why does he use heart? He's not talking about this fleshly muscle that's beating on the inside of my chest. But when the Bible uses heart, it's talking about the center of who we are. It's talking about our affections. It's talking about what we hold important and what we hold dear. And he says, God, I want to present to you a heart of wisdom. This wisdom that understands how to take the knowledge of your word and live it out. This wisdom that says, if you want me to live that way, then that's the way I'll live. I don't want to just know what you want. I want to do what you want. And understand this, that not only in that day do we stand before him and we're able to present a heart of wisdom when we live intentionally for the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, but we receive the blessings of living in wisdom now. Living God's way brings God's blessing. There, now, I don't know if you believe that or not. But if there was no heaven, and we didn't have promise of heaven, then living God's way brings its own reward. That if we got everything else that God offers to us but heaven, I'd still take righteousness, peace, and joy. I would still take his presence and his power here. I would still take the peace that I give, knowing that I'm in right standing with God. I would still take that over broken relationships, and I would still take that over addictions and being bound to things. I would still take that than being in the middle of the night and having anxiety and depression and worry. I would still take the blessings that come from living in wisdom, even if there was no heaven. So understand this, that living in God's way gives its own blessings in this life. Happy is the man that seeks the Lord. Righteousness has its own reward. I've mentioned this before, but there is this principle that you see lived out in people's lives. It's called redemptive lift. That when you live God's way, everything in your life just gets better. Because you don't spend $300 a weekend on alcohol when you live God's way. That means you don't have hangovers. That means you don't get in fights. That means you don't damage your relationships. That means you got $300. That's just a much better alternative. So living God's way just makes everything better. Oh, that's not to say there are not problems. Jesus said in this life we would have tribulations. Problems are going to come. But I'll take the few problems that come for the righteousness that he offers me and the peace and the joy and the love that he offers me. I'll take a little bit of discomfort here and there and people not understanding what I'm doing and maybe making fun of me because I'm this holy roller or whatever. I'll take any of that for all of the stuff that Jesus gives me while I'm here. But thank God it's not just here, but we have an eternity that we can live. We are going to live with him forever. And it's going to make up for anything we lacked down here. And when we do things God's way, we stand before him with a heart of wisdom. The one who will judge all will look at our heart. Sometimes people would say, see, God looks on the heart. He doesn't look on the outward. That's biblical. 1 Samuel. It's biblical. But they make the mistake of going, our actions don't matter. Because God looks at the heart. And in context, when God says man looks on the outward appearance, God looks on the heart, he's talking about all of David's brothers, they were bigger than him. They were better than him. This, that, and the other. They're stronger. They're taller. They're all more handsome. When God looks at the heart, he's not judging us by our physical limitations, but actions do matter because the heart matters. If Anna would come to the piano, the Bible would say, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. So when you talk ways you shouldn't, you say, God looks on the heart. Yeah, he does. But I can see your heart by what you say. I can know your heart by the words you use. The Bible would tell us that out of the heart flows the issues of life. I can tell your heart by your actions. Oh, I can't see it perfectly. I can't even see me perfectly. The heart is deceitful and desperately wicked. Who can know it? Only God can know. But what we do matters because it reflects our heart. So when we stand before God and present a heart of wisdom, we are standing before God presenting a life lived for his glory. We stand before God with a life that is lived for his purpose. I want to stand before him with a life that has been lived pleasing to him. A life lived in the way in which he has called me to live. A life that has been lived with intentionality. I'm not just floating through life, but I have a purpose. It's to glorify him. I have a purpose. It's to do his will. I have a purpose. It's to do what he wants me to do. A life following his word. A life lived with the end in mind. A life understanding that there is coming a day when I will stand before him. And if you take this verse in isolation, I'll either present to him a heart of wisdom or a heart without it. I either have lived my life applying the knowledge of his word in the way I live, in the way I act, in the way I behave, or I stand before him being a hearer of the word and not a doer. God is calling us this graduation Sunday, and I know many of the graduates aren't in here and some of the younger ones are next door. But if I could echo the words of Moses one more time, so teach me, Lord, to number my days, that I may present to you a heart of wisdom. A heart that has lived out your word. A heart that has lived out the truths of your word. A heart that has lived with intentionality and purpose. And that purpose can't be just to see how much stuff I can get, to see how much fun I can have. But I got to live, Lord, for your glory. When we number our days, we live intentionally for him. When we number our days, our lives take on greater significance. When we number our days, we focus on what really matters. We focus on his kingdom. We focus on our family. We focus on reaching the lost. Our lives are lived not for what we can get here. They're not lived for the pleasures of this life, but our lives are lived for his glory. Our lives become all about Jesus. Our lives are lived to please and honor him. It doesn't mean we don't get to have fun. We should have vacations. We should have rest and relaxation. Because God instituted the Sabbath for us. You can't work every day. We need downtime. We need fun time. But when we number our days, his purpose becomes our purpose. When we number our days, we share the gospel with the lost. When we number our days, we spend time in his word. And when we number our days, we spend time in prayer. When we number our days, we're faithful to his house. When we number our days, everything else pales in comparison. to the significance of the will of God. You see it illustrated in various ways. Would you stand together? You see it illustrated in various ways and in various situations. It's not a countdown, it's a count up. That whether it's marking the days, if you're in prison and you mark every time the sun comes up, you put another mark on the day, you're just adding up the total number of days. But life is not about the number of days we have lived. Our lives are now about the number of days we have left. It doesn't matter that I've lived 365 days times 53 and another 40 plus. It doesn't matter how many days are behind. What really matters is how many days are left. But the real deal, and this is the reality, we don't know how many days are left. We don't know what tomorrow holds. We don't know what the rest of today holds. It would be nice, in one sense, if we could see the glass of sand as it trickles down and we could see what's left. When you got a lot, you could be like, oh yeah, I mean, I've got plenty of time. When it gets down, there's just not much left. That would be a little depressing. So God doesn't tell us how many days we have. So how can I number my days and I don't know how many days I have? It's just one day at a time, live for His glory. One day at a time, live for His purpose. We can't see how much time is left, but somewhere there's a countdown for every one of us. It is appointed unto men once to die, and after that, the judgment. There is an appointed time. There is a set number of days for each of us. For some of us, it will be that we leave this life through death. For some of us, it will be that we leave this life through the rapture. But for all of us, there is a set time. What we do with the time we have left is more important than anything that we've done with the time we've had. Because you can start really good. I've been in the church all my life. I don't know a time when I wasn't in church. My earliest memories are in the house of God. But that doesn't matter if I squander the days I have left. That all the stuff that's gone before doesn't matter if I'm not numbering my days from now until eternity. It's more important what we have left than what we've done with what we've had. So whether you've lived for God 50 years or 40 or 30 years or 30 days, from now to eternity, that's what's most important. What we do with the time we have left is what makes the difference. If I mess up the remaining days I have left, then what has gone before is of no value. But if I've messed up all the days before, then what really becomes important now is what I do with what I've got left. That you can be 50 years old and you've not served God for 49 of those 50 or 49 and a half of those, but if you're serving God now and you serve Him forever, you can present to Him that heart of wisdom when you live with intentionality and purpose. So teach us, Lord, to number our days. He doesn't say, teach us, Lord, to number our years. Because some may not have a year left. Don't teach us to number our months, Lord. Because some may not have months left. Don't teach us, Lord, to number our weeks, because some may not have weeks left. but teach us, Lord, to number our days. I've got to live this day for that day. I've got to live today like it's my last day, because tomorrow may be the day I stand before the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. Teach me, Lord, to number my days. So today I'm reaching for somebody who says, I've got time. I'm young. There's plenty of time. I don't have to go all in for Jesus just yet. I can dabble around in church here and there. I don't have to give it my all. I've got other stuff I want to do. I've got other things on my agenda. I don't have to commit my life fully to Jesus. I've got more time. I know, yeah, I'll give Jesus time on my calendar. I'll give him the leftover spots. When I've got everything else that I want to do, then Jesus, here's a little bit of leftover. I'll give him my leftover calendar, my leftover energy. I've got a life to live. I've got dreams to chase. I've got sights to see and fun to have. But understand this, life is a vapor. It's here today and gone tomorrow. We don't know what tomorrow holds, so Lord, teach us to number our days. Teach me, Lord, to number my days. I don't know what tomorrow holds, Lord, but I want to make every day count. God, I want to make every day I have count for your glory, count for your kingdom. Lord, I want to give you my all. I want to give you my everything. I want my life to be lived for you. I want everything I am and everything I have, Lord, to be for your glory. God, I want you to have my heart. I want it to be a heart of wisdom. Today is the day of salvation. Now is the appointed time. Today is the day to give him everything, because tomorrow may never come.